Hello, all sentient beings, and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we pick up a lot of G1 and IDW Easter eggs in our review of the Transformers Cyberverse cartoon. We've got more teaser images from the upcoming Ghostbusters Transformers crossover, and producer Lorenzo de Bonaventura has, wait for it, plans for the upcoming Transformers live-action movies. Today is Friday, March 22nd, 2019, and this is episode 121 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that would gladly trade a The Last Night sequel for a Beast Wars movie. I'm your host Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hello. I have thoughts. Just wait till media news.
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
I, too, have opinions. We will have a discussion. Let's talk Transformers.
All right. I hope that's not any different from all our other podcasts. Where we have thoughts and opinions and discussions, but
every other podcast leading up to this one has been scripted.
All right. If you listen to the toy show, you have already heard us talk about this, but I will throw it again to Jeremy to bring us in with the sad news before we move on with the rest of the show.
Yeah, we had the news that Beast Wars writer Larry DiTilio had passed away. He worked on Beast Wars, something I didn't realize until I went through his TF Wiki page. He also did the episode Predacons Rising and Transformers Animated, but he did so much more than Transformers stuff. He did He-Man, She-Ra, Babylon 5. He worked on so many things in between, and it's just some of the best episodes of Beast Wars, I think, are to his credit. So he's going to be missed, and yeah, it's a big loss for the community.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of it's a young age to. I mean, I know he had an illness, so it's not these things happen. So yeah, it's just kind of sad. But we thank him for all the work he put into the Transformers franchise. Like I think I said it already on the toy show that Beast Wars really was a big resurgence of Transformers and brought Transformers back into the forefront. So mm-hmm. You know, at the time when Beast Wars came out, Transformers was considered a kind of a dead franchise. So.
Yeah, I mean, Beast Wars really brought it back, and then, you know, credit to him and Bob Ford for being accepting of the fandom, and that the fandom's influences are what really brought a lot of the G1 connections into Beast Wars, which made it, in my opinion, a much better show.
Yep, definitely. All right, well, let's get back to some high energy and get back into the rest of talking about Transformers. So, as always, we start off every show by thanking our Donatrions, those beautiful people who support us on Patreon and PayPal. So thank you to everyone who does that. If you would like to join those ranks, just go to transmissionspodcast.com/support. And there you can find links to join us on Patreon and PayPal. If you don't want to do that, you can still support us by buying merchandise from our TeePublic store at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. There you can find some t-shirt designs from us. And we just recently have a new design from friend of the show, K-Girl, who designed our Transmissions logo. And she also has designed some other Transmissions shirts for us. You can get her shirt from our store, or you can go directly to her store on TeePublic, and we will have a link.
What's it called?
You know, Daryl.
Yes, I do.
TeePublic.com/user/SuperstarK.
SuperstarK.
So we will have a link in the show notes, so you can go straight there. But yeah, you can get shirts from get shirts from her store, or get shirts from our store. So. Support everyone. All right. So let's start off with talking about some comics news. All right, so we have some news about the next IDW big volume collection, IDW collection phase 2, volume 10. This is coming in December of 2019. This is going to collect issues 44 and 45 of Transformers, 45 to 49 of More Than Meets the Eye, 6 to 7 of Windblade, and the Sins of the Wreckers miniseries, the Combiner Hunters one-shot, and the Holiday Special. So, bit of a kind of a mix of stuff. The cover features Victorian there, so you can see that cover image linked from the Amazon listing. Not sure who the artist is on that cover, but
I think it might be Sarah.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I think I just remember seeing somewhere it was.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon might know.
But yeah, so if you're collecting the trades, they're still pushing them out. I think they're going to try and go through up to the end of the previous continuity. I wonder if when they get to Revolution, that'll be phase 3. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I was about to say, is the new series phase 3 or phase 4?
Yeah, I don't know. We should ask John Barber.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we've got more preview images from the Transformers Ghostbusters crossover. We've got some art showing off the Gozer meeting Megatron and the Decepticons. So you can see Megatron strides forward. One of the robotic terror dogs goes to attack Megatron. Megatron just swats him away, like, casually, and walks right up to Gozer face to face.
He does not look impressed.
Then we see, looks like she similar to the 1984 Ghostbusters movie where she asks them to pick the form of their destroyer. Starscream. It looks like Starscream picks, and he imagines himself a giant Starscream with a crown with the heads of Megatron, Shockwave, Optimus Prime, and Jetfire draped around him, and holding a Matrix too. So that's interesting. That's either Megatron's worst fear or Starscream's greatest desire. Then another cover image, I think, is the Ghostbusters facing off against a bunch of Kremzeeks and Starscream's ghost. Starscream's ghost leading a bunch of Kremzeeks, which is cool.
I'm really liking the art in this. It's, you know, for artists that, you know, coming from the Ghostbusters side, they're really getting, you know, the look of the Transformers are spot on.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe you guys want to migrate over to some Transformers art. For, you know, moonlighting.
Yeah, I love that the inside of Gozer's temple thing there is the kind of trippy look from the opening credits of the Transformers movie.
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right, and next we have an exclusive cover for Transformers number 1 at WonderCon. This is art by
EJ Sue.
Oh, yeah, that's right, EJ Sue. Good old EJ Sue from the well-known from the first IDW Transformers series. So this one features Megatron, Orion Pax, and Chromia. So if you're going to WonderCon, you can pick this up. And this is going to be $10 at WonderCon. And it's, I think WonderCon's coming up at the end of March. So
it's enjoy. Not bad looking either.
Yeah, it's a nice cover.
And I think we talked last week about some Transformers panels at WonderCon.
Yes, we did.
I saw my camera. We actually talked about it. But if you are going to be at WonderCon and you can go to those panels, please get in touch with us. We'd like to talk to you about what you saw.
Be our person on the scene. Give us the inside scoop. All right, well, that's all the comics news. So let's move on to our comic review? Oh, wait, no. No IDW comic, Transformers comic this week. So we're going to do something a little bit different, and we are going to do a cartoon review. So we are going to talk about the second half of the Transformers Cyberverse cartoon. So I think last time we talked about the episode, it was episode 10, McAdams, where we, you know, we loved all the IDW references that were in that. So we're going to talk a little bit about the back half of the season. Daryl, I'm going to throw it to you to help lead us through this discussion here. And, you know, what did you think overall of the Cyberverse series?
I'm really liking it. I remember watching the first two episodes back to back and thinking, this is not going to be any good.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time we got to the latter half of that first 10, I was really into it. As far as this last 8 episodes go, so from 11 till 18, it was the same as the first or the last 5 from the first 10. It was great stuff. These writers are pulling from the IDW, the old storylines, introducing stuff that has like really deep mythology and character driven stuff that's really fun, but also it's building Bumblebee's memories and putting them in kind of this weird order where he's trying to fit together what's happened to him, but also showing the audience that this war has started that he's been a part of, but kind of how it started and putting pieces together. I've really liked watching that.
Mm-hmm.
What about you guys? We've got 8 episodes to kind of go through here, 11 minutes each. So that's a lot of time. Let's start. I mean, episode 11 is called Sabotage.
Sabotage.
This is the episode where Shockwave traps Bumblebee in a false memory. And it's supposed to kind of bring him over to the Decepticon side. You want to talk about this one for a bit? Do you remember it?
Yeah, I mean, I did a rewatch today, so I put a YouTube playlist and just watched them back to back, and I took a few notes just as to remind me of little bits I wanted to mention. But
okay,
the sabotage episode, it was fun. One thing that when they give Bumblebee's false memories. And the one thing that really stuck out to me was they had a cameo of Rack and Ruin, who is a very obscure character. He's a G1 wrecker from the UK comics that has not really been shown or mentioned in very many places. He's a weird character because he's basically a Siamese twin bot or conjoined twin bot, which we don't see a lot of in Transformers. And this, I think this would be his like first appearance in a TV or animated show. Yeah. So
I would say so. Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. And then just the general memory I thought Shockwave had created was funny because not only does he make Bumblebee like a Decepticon traitor, then at the end you have the further twist that, yeah, Optimus Prime, leader of the Autobots, he is also a Decepticon traitor working with Bumblebee, and they will overthrow the Autobots together. Which kind of like, okay, Shockwave, you just went a little too far. You could have made it a little bit more plausible.
he always had it. He just had to do that little extra tweak.
Yeah, it reminds me of in The Simpsons when Bart tries to fake his report card grades and he tries to turn all his D minuses into A pluses. And when Homer looks at the report card, he says, come on, boy, a D turns into a B so easily. You just got greedy.
Jeremy, did you have anything to mention about this episode?
I mean, I really enjoyed it as well. I do. I like the conceit of this episode with the fake memory. It's just it was fun kind of just seeing what, you know, is a fake memory, but, you know, it just he's going through this buying it, and then the Optimus Prime reveal happens, and that's enough to shake him out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's it was fun.
All right, well, let's move on to episode 12. This is called Teletran X.
That is the proper spelling.
Okay, I did notice, I think only, it seems like only the Optimus Prime voice actor has a problem with the Teletron thing. Everyone else seems to say Teletran correctly. Mm-hmm. It's just the Optimus Prime voice actor who's having some trouble there.
Yeah, and I think he said it twice.
Yeah.
It's only been done twice. Okay, so this one's called Teletran X or Teletron X. It's Windblade and Bumblebee trace an Autobot signal to find themselves lured into a trap set by Slipstream and her seekers. For me, the ongoing kind of, you know, battle between Slipstream and Windblade has been, you know, great fun through this thing. Will Slipstream get the best of Windblade? At one point she does. But then it gets screwed up. Yeah, it's been fun to watch because, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion that Windblade's going to get away or, you know, beat Slipstream, because, you know, they're both fairly evenly matched. Charles, what do you think? What do you remember of Teletran X?
I like the Teletran X drone character. I thought he was he's a fun comic relief for the rest of the series, and his continual not crew catchphrase was, mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I thought it was, I mean, and also like when they first find him, they're like, you know, he's like, they ask him, can you help us? He's like, well, not right now, cause I'm a trap. And then the Decepticons come out and it's like, But he's like, he's so good natured. He's like, oh, well, you know, he's still helping the Autobots. He's like, I didn't really want to be a trap, but they, you know, they used me. And then he actually starts helping them. So he's been a fun character. And then, you know, he has a big moment at the very end of the last episode.
He started out really annoying to me.
Yeah.
It got better towards the end, but at the big when during this introduction, I was just like, oh, I'm really not gonna like this character.
I mean, he's the R2-D2 or the, what was the one from the last the last series,
BB-8?
No, not Star Wars. But the one from the RID 2005.
I'm thinking Glitch, but it's
Fix It,
not Glitch. Fix It.
Yes, it's the Fix-It character. That's who Teletran X is. He's the Fix-It character for this show.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and they do a good job with him. He's fun. Let's move on to episode 13. This one's called Matrix of Leadership. This is a big one. Bumblebee learns the meaning of the leadership through three memories of Optimus Prime. So this one here, I just remember him kind of sitting in his memory ball and just kind of looking at different memories of Optimus Prime. Honestly, I cannot remember the specific memories. Charles, you watched it today. I'm going to kind of rest on you to remind me of them. But this kind of solidified him as, you know, Bumblebee as, yeah, I know what side I'm on, and I need to find Optimus Prime. I hope to find Optimus Prime. What are your thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, so I mean, they actually have the scene where Optimus gets the Matrix, and the way they do it here is they have Alpha Trion. So Alpha Trion is one of the senators, and he's been wounded after, you know, battle with the Decepticons at some point. When the Decepticons, I guess, you know, as they usually do when they have the uprising in a lot of continuities, the Decepticons have like murdered the current government. And Alpha Trion was one of the council members. He's basically on his last breath, but he's still got he's got the Matrix. He's been keeping the Matrix safe, waiting for a bot to assume the next bot to assume the mantle of Prime. And, Optimus. Well, they don't call him by name, so you can, I guess you can assume at this point he's still Orion Pax, but they don't really say that in the explicitly on the show. But B basically brings Orion to Alpha Trion, and Alpha Trion bestows the Matrix on him, and he becomes Optimus Prime. And, you know, he says, "I'm not worthy, Alpha Trion," and Alpha Trion, "I'm not worthy, I'm not ready," but Alpha Trion says, "No, you're the one." Another memory is
the touch starts playing.
Another memory that's fun is that they like Prime and Bumblebee are fleeing some Seekers being chased by Starscream, and Starscream actually has a sonic scream power that he unleashes, but then, you know, Prime fights back, and I guess these are gimmicks from the toy, because Prime fights back with his like Autobot shield on when he turns into truck mode. And, you know, just shows his some more badassery when he's fighting the Seekers.
Yeah, I like the Sonic Scream attack. That was nice.
Yeah. And then another memory is Bumblebee and Wheeljack are fleeing Decepticons, trying to get back there behind the Autobot lines, which I thought was a nice callback to the first G1 episode, because that's where you see Bumblebee and Wheeljack as a team. Mm-hmm. And as they're escaping, they're like, they left Prowl behind. They're like, "How we need to go back for Prowl," but, you know, they're really pinned down. And so, but then they see in the distance that they've got backup, because Optimus Prime is carrying Prowl by himself back, you know, to safety. So, you know, just shows another hero moment for Optimus Prime, how he never leaves a bot behind. So, you know, all suitably heroic moments for Optimus Prime. And this inspires Bumblebee to go back and rescue Windblade, because Windblade was captured in the last episode, and she basically bought Bumblebee and Teletran X time to escape, because, you know, B wanted to use Teletran X to find the location of the Ark. Of course, Teletran X says, "Oh, I don't actually know where the Ark is." So then Bumblebee decides, yeah, they need to go back and rescue Windblade.
Jeremy, did you have anything to add to that?
Just I like the tweaks on the whole, you know, traditional Matrix stuff, where, I mean, we get basically what was in the 86 movie between Optimus and Ultra Magnus, between Alpha Trion and Optimus here. I like how the planet is dying because Optimus made a mistake and injected the AllSpark. You know, this is not an infallible character, and I like that, and it really kind of gives, I don't know, I mean, we, you know, we saw the whole ejecting of the AllSpark in the live action movies, and I can't remember if they did that in Transformers Prime or not, but I like seeing that it is a bad decision and there are catastrophic effects because of it, and you know, the Ark is literally like an Ark trying to save the race with like however many people get on it. These episodes, like each one, I'm enjoying better than the last as we go on.
All right, well, let's move on to episode 14. This one's called Siloed, and this one, amongst others, this one is also written by Margaret Scott, so that's important to know, because we know her from writing our favorite one of our favorites, Till All Are One book, and she worked on Transformers Prime. She worked on a little bit on RID, and she is now currently writing Batgirl. So there you go. But in Siloed, the Seekers attempt to extract the location of the Ark from Windblade's memories. So the Seekers are not smart, and that's fine. I don't dislike that about them. I think that's a great little tidbit to throw in there, that the Seekers, except for a few like Slipstream and probably Starscream, but the, you know, the kind of unnamed the rank and file ones, they're just dumb, and that's perfectly fine, you know. So this one here, you know, I alluded to it before a couple episodes ago, Slipstream did in the last episode finally get the best of Windblade, and they captured her. And so now they're trying to get the memories of the Ark out of her head, but she doesn't know them. So it's a good episode. And, I remember, you know, because they, Bumblebee, and, you know, he needs to, go and rescue her. And that's the main plot of this episode. Charles.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very much, it's appropriate that Margaret Scott writes this episode because it is very much a Windblade focused episode. And it's funny also, she escapes basically, she pretty much escapes without Bumblebee's help, and he just, you know, comes in at the last second to finally pull her up out of the silo. But for the most part, she gets out on her own.
They open the last door.
I did like the Seeker, the whole Seeker hierarchy. I think it's interesting that in this show, you have, it seems like a majority of the Seekers, at least on Earth, are female. Like you have Slipstream, you have Nova Storm, you have Acid Storm. They're all female Seekers. And the only real, like, regular male Seekers you see are Thundercracker and Thrust. And Thrust is not a Conehead, sadly. I guess they couldn't spare for the extra animation model for the Conehead design. But I just think that was it was interesting to see that. Shockwave, I like Shockwave having perpetual angry eye. I think that's an interesting wrinkle to add to him. And him being very dismissive of the Seekers and their intelligence was a nice little detail.
Okay, and Jeremy, did you want to throw something in there?
Yeah, I mean, I like how there's, like, the reveal towards the end of this where Slipstream has to report in about, like, what they have found and being frustrated that Windblade's not providing any information. She cranks up the psychic patch thing as far as it'll go, and that's ultimately the downfall because, like, whatever happens, Windblade's able to use that to kind of do a blast that knocks out the Seekers guarding her. But also, Slipstream has to go and report in, and it's not just Starscream. We get Shockwave as well. It's an interesting Shockwave we see here. Starscream is Starscream and stuff, but Shockwave is very, calculating, and I really like their take on Shockwave here. Mm-hmm. Windblade is done very well, and I really like that they have Margaret do this episode.
All right, so we'll move on to episode 15. This one's called King of Dinosaurs, King of the Dinosaurs, and this one should be kind of self-explanatory, but the description is Windblade and Bumblebee uncover a buried Autobot who turns out to be an old friend. So that combined with the name should help you out. And if you've been watching the show up until now, you can put two and two together. The old friend and the king of dinosaurs is Grimlock. So,
what?
Spoilers. It's and this. I mean, we've seen Grimlock before because he was in some flashbacks. I like the characterization of Grimlock. He's we get him in a different mode in the first appearance. Because I don't think he can transform out of his dinosaur mode until the very end. And in his dinosaur mode, he is just enraged and they can't control him. So he's an interesting character when he transforms. Because once he gets back into robot mode, he's fine. But once he's in dinosaur mode, he's uncontrollable.
I think this is something that they took from the comics, where I don't know if they're doing it the same way here, but in the comics, wasn't it where, like, in robot mode, there was, like, pressure put on his brain module that kind of dumbed him down. Mm-hmm. And here it might be like a power thing, but similar aspect.
I think also it was in the War for Cybertron or Fall of Cybertron game where, as a result of Shockwave's experiments on the Dinobots, they were like rage monsters in dinosaur mode regular in robot mode. But yeah, I mean, it's the Incredible Hulk. That's who he is. Incredible Hulk, yeah, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, yes. You know, all that good stuff.
But we were all concerned when they first introduced Grimlock and he's this like proper speaking character. And we're like,
have they done to our Grimlock.
But this is a nice mix of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the one,
Charles, do you want to expand? Yeah.
Go ahead. This is the one thing that kind of bothers me because they've like blown the time scale out beyond all proportion. Like it's already kind of a stretch in G1 when they crash land on Earth 4 million years ago. I mean, that's already a really long time. Now they crash on Earth 65 million years ago, and all the other Transformers have just been running around for 65 million years, still at war, and still, I mean, everyone should be dust after 65 million years. I don't care if you're a robot that, you know, has a really long lifespan. You're not surviving for 65 million years in perpetual war. I mean, that just seems
ridiculous. Your ship is not gonna not be discovered.
Yeah. That's just a really, really, really long time. But other than, I mean, I can basically suspend my disbelief for that. But other than that, everything was fine. I thought it was funny that Grimlock, like, basically, he literally became king of the dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs were actually helping him, like, build the ark and everything. The little bit of comedy when he's woken up to try and save the ark, and the ark's like, Teletran 1 is like, okay, Grimlock, go to my main console to help save your crew. And then he immediately gets thrown out of the air, out of the hull. And Teletran 1's like, never mind. that little bit of comedy interjected into the episode was fun. And yeah, Grimlock's a fun character here.
Do you have anything else you wanted to add, Jeremy?
No, I think said everything already. This fun episode.
Yeah, it is. Episode 16 is called The Extinction Event. And this one is its description. The newly formed team of Autobots must stop Shockwave from destroying all life on the planet. So this one I don't remember too much about. I do believe it's more of a flashback than anything.
No,
but no, it's okay. All present.
Then I don't remember it at all. But yeah, go ahead, Charles. Tell us what this one's about.
So basically, like the last few episodes, like all the Decepticons have been waiting for Shockwave to arrive, and Shockwave basically the siloed episode, he tells Slipstream, okay, I'm going to send you instructions to repair the space bridge in orbit around Earth. And I guess, you know, off screen, they did that. So then the space bridge opens and Shockwave's ship comes through. And Shockwave's like, okay, you guys have been screwing up royally this whole time. So now I'm going to take charge. And the easiest way to basically locate the Autobots and take care of them is to basically eliminate all organic life on the planet. And then we'll have no obstructions to destroy the Autobots. So Shockwave's, you know, not wasting any time. He's like, let's just nuke it from orbit.
He's not wrong.
So he's got like two giant mega ships. He's going to send them to both poles of the planet, and then they'll disrupt the magnetic field of the planet, and that should kill everything. And so the Autobots detect this, but they figure out, okay, we don't need to destroy both ships. We just need to destroy one to stop Shockwave's plan. And they do that. It's the three Autobots versus all of the Seekers and Shadow Striker, who is basically Shockwave's henchwoman, and then Shockwave. So they win, but Shockwave has a little drone baby that sneaks aboard the Autobots ship. So like he's basically got someone spying on the Autobots as they are continuing to search for the Ark. So his plan was foiled, but he's got a backup plan, because really all he cares about is getting to the Ark and destroying, either finding the Allspark and or destroying the Autobots. So that sets us up for the next episode.
Jeremy.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's shocking to see that there's actually a Decepticon with a good plan, but I mean, it's Shockwave. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, this is just really nice to see like real stakes here. Although I'm surprised that we don't see any like defenses trying to attack them.
That's true.
I mean, the most humans we've seen was just the, you know, distance. In the last episode, there was like a city in the distance, but when they actually go into the city, there's no one there. I don't know. I think, you know, the whole Earth's field thing, it's a nice, I mean, kind of cliched, but nice gimmick here. And, you know, I like the way they had to go and try to destroy it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's move on to episode 17. This one's called Awaken Sleeping Giants. And this one is the Autobot team finally discovers the location of the Ark. Finally! I mean, really, this is episode 17. They've been looking for it since episode 1. You know, a lot of cartoons or shows might have them found it by the end of episode 1. So, I mean, here there are 11-minute episodes. So we're really at the end or the beginning of episode 9 of a full-length episodic TV. So that's a long time. This one here, I think this was basically Grimlock just taking them to it. He had it all along, but from what I recall, he had to remember how to like open it.
Mm-hmm. Well, since Grimlock was on Earth 65 million years ago, all the land masses were one land mass. So
right.
Now that they are all split apart, they couldn't figure out where the location was. And then Teletran X like used his, you know, computer calculations to figure out, oh, this is where the Ark is.
Mm-hmm. It's like if it was here and it's now over here.
Yeah.
And I got to give him props for that because this is a kid's cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Props for education here. You know, throwing a little supercontinent into it.
Yep.
But what stuck out to you in the episode here, Charles?
Well, I mean, for the big thing is the Ark, the location of the Ark is Mount St. Hilary, which is the mountain that the volcano that was named in the original G1 comic, of course, based on the real volcano Mount St. Helens, which I think is in Oregon or Washington.
Washington State, I think.
Yeah. So nice callback there. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, straightforward episode. The Autobots find the location. Shockwave's got his drone spying on them, so they got the location. So it's a race to the Ark. And, you know, it's a, you know, basically a bit of a fight around the Ark. And then, you know, finally, the next episode is the final confrontation. So pretty straightforward, but, you know, still fun.
Jeremy, what do you remember of it?
The Mount St. Hilary thing was awesome. That was really good. We get to see a fastball special, which,
yes,
you know,
true.
I think Grimlock threw Bumblebee. It's, I love that, you know, in G1 and in most places we see this, it's the spaceship is sticking out of the mountain. And here it's more in like the belly of the volcano is where the ship is. So, yeah, it's completely hidden, but why hasn't the volcano completely destroyed it by now? But, I mean, still, like you said earlier, suspension of disbelief. It is great that, you know, it's pretty, you know, straightforward, you know, A, B, C, get to the end result. But, I mean, this is the next to last episode. I love the fact that we have, like, a hidden drone spy from Shockwave. So, you know, they're making it believable as to how the Decepticons find out. You know, like you said, with the whole, you know, supercontinent thing, the writing is actually pretty smart in how they're doing some things here. And I love the Shockwave drones look like the little bitty spidery Shockwave we've been getting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was a great episode.
Then that brings us to the last episode, number 18, Eruption. Autobot team must fight its way through Shockwave and his Decepticons to defend the Ark and awaken Optimus Prime and the other Autobots. From what I recall of this episode, they are only able to awaken one, and it's Optimus Prime.
No, they awaken everybody at the very end. Yeah.
Then I have no idea what happened, because it has been a while since I've seen these. I was supposed to watch them all this weekend, and I got busy.
You were excused. You got some pretty good interviews.
So, Charles, tell me what happened in this episode that I don't remember at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's the continuing battle between the Autobots and the Decepticons, the Autobots being Bumblebee, Grimlock, and Windblade. Bumblebee and Teletran X get into the Ark, and Teletran X basically uploads, he finds that the Teletran 1 is basically deactivated, but he can reboot Teletran 1 by uploading himself, since he is a backup copy of Teletran 1. And he does that, he gets shot as he's in mid-upload, so Bumblebee thinks he's dead. But he succeeded, and Teletran X is now the Ark. And so Teletran X, basically, he has a little bit of growing pains figuring out all his internal systems, but he does manage to activate the Ark's weapons to fight off the Decepticons. But Shockwave has his ship in orbit, basically heating up the volcano to make it erupt, which will destroy the Ark, but at the last second, Teletran X activates the shields, so the Ark is saved. And in the meantime, he activates the reanimation protocol to activate all the other Autobots. So the last scene of the episode is, so after the eruption, the engines of the Ark are exposed at the bottom of the volcano, just like in G1, and all the Autobots come out. They're awakened now. They're ready to fight. And Teletran X is like, oh, it's good that you're all awake, because there's a Decepticon armada here ready to attack. So Starscream has brought all the Decepticons to attack. And so the last line is Optimus Prime saying, Autobots, roll out. And that is the end of the first season. So it's all a big prologue for the real show, which I guess will be later this year.
Mm-hmm. And as far as that goes, we know that the most recent news is that Chapter 2 is going to be called Power of the Spark, and it's planned on being released in the fourth quarter of 2019, so this year. So look forward to the end of the year. But overall, my opinions on this last half of the season, I think were fantastic. Really great pacing. They didn't spend a lot of time on, like, kind of BS, kind of jokey things. Not that I expected Transformers Prime, like, level darkness out of this, but it was fun. I watched every episode with my daughter, and she loved it. When she asked me a question, I was able to answer it because I knew the backstory of the characters and a lot of the stuff. I mean, going back to episode 10, McAdam, I had no idea who that was, so I couldn't answer that. But we researched it together and we figured it out. So yeah, and I actually really liked the kind of the storyline that Shadow Striker took.
Mm-hmm. Kind very of interesting new character.
Very interesting, and how she just cannot catch a break.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost sad, but she brings it on herself.
It's kind of like Nebula from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, I think, like, that's a very good comparison.
Yeah, with particularly the body replacements and stuff.
Yeah. All in all, you guys, what do you feel, Charles?
Yeah, I was really digging this show by the end. I enjoyed it. The only complaint that I'd have is it's you can't do one episode a week. I mean, I know you guys in Canada probably got two a week. They need to just they need to show two a week here. I mean, 15 minutes is just too short. I mean, and then they don't even like rerun them at all during the on Cartoon Network, but I guess they're on YouTube, so I guess it doesn't matter.
At least they're doing that.
Yeah.
Are you guys not getting reruns right now?
You can watch it on demand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we were getting reruns right now too.
I guess in an on-demand world, reruns are not as significant, but
I mean, I really like the Hasbro's just putting them on YouTube.
That's, yeah.
I mean,
well, it makes no difference to anyone outside of outside of the U.S. though.
Yeah, they need to un-region lock them.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's good for especially me and Jeremy
for the show that's made in Ireland. Right. Maybe let the Irish people watch it too. And today being, you know, for the next 2 minutes, it's St. Patrick's Day. We're all a little Irish.
I still got an hour.
Well, in Ireland, it's no longer St. Patrick's Day at this point.
Every day is St. Patrick's Day in Ireland. Yeah, so that's it for the comic book review. Send it back to you, Charles.
All right, well, Daryl, I'm going to turn the table right back around because we're going into Transformers Media News.
All right, in media news this week, we've got the new starter set that's being been announced. It's the Bumblebee versus Megatron set. Doesn't seem too fair to me. It's a new set with new cards. There looks to be a Windblade card in it and a Starscream card in it as well. And you also get a new 40 battle cards for game decks. So there you go. That's kind of fun. If you wanted something a little different, yeah, look to pick that up. Bumblebee the movie news. Wilson X. Bumblebee basketball leather balls. Wow. This is a little much. So we've got yellow and black balls for Bumblebee the movie.
They're basketballs.
Oh, okay. Still, it's a little too much. But yeah, no, it's that's fine, I guess. We've got Haley Steinfeld in Japan doing some press for the Bumblebee movie being its release in Japan. I don't know. Well, I mean, it looks like it's her and her voice actor who's doing the voice, so that's kind of fun. But yeah, take a look at that if you're interested. Also, we've got Bumblebee the movie DVD plus Blu-ray combo pack with free digital copy of Transformers 2007. Why? So yeah, you can get that now too if you want. Future movies. Here we go. All right, future of Transformers movies. Beast Wars live action movie remains undecided.
With one of the beginning of a number of quotes from Lorenzo Di Bonaventura. How many people know Beast Wars?
I know Lorenzo Di Bonaventura does, because he is the producer. He knows everything about Transformers.
Clearly.
He has the Lorenzo Di Bonaventura cast, and it's all about Transformers.
Yeah. Well, let's just say we'll have more choice quotes from him coming up.
I mean, so my one... so he mentions, like, the... He says, well, the live action Beast Wars movie would cost $450 million to make. I mean, that's crazy because you'd need to make $1.125 billion to break even. But the question I have is, why would you make a live action Beast Wars movie? That makes no sense. I mean, I know Disney's making a live action, quote unquote, live action Lion King movie. That's also equally
animated.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, a Beast Wars movie, just make it an animated movie. Why would you want to make it photorealistic live action?
Look at the success of Spider-Verse. You can make a blockbuster animated movie.
So, I mean,
Marvel can. Lorenzo Di Bonaventura cannot.
Apparently
he
not.
He knows he needs to make $1.125 billion. With whatever movie he needs to make to break even. And he can't do that unless Michael Bay is there.
Mm.
And he's not going to do it with them silly cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just don't do a live-action Beast Wars movie. Just do a Beast Wars movie without any humans. Make it all animated. That's all you need to do. And it won't cost $450 million.
You know what? Just take the agenda episodes, reanimate it with modern animation, and just put that out as a single feature. I mean, don't even say it's a new thing. Just say, hey, this is an updated HD version of this awesome arc.
Mm-hmm.
Much cheaper, and you will make bank on it.
$1.125 billion?
Well, not that. But, I mean, that's just to reach the break-even value of the $450 million.
But that's $1.125 billion bank.
Well, but I mean, you know, the five people that know Beast Wars would go and love it.
Next topic here. The Optimus Prime solo movie has been halted. More information on Bumblebee 2. According to the all-knowing Lorenzo Di Bonaventura, doing a solo Optimus movie would be like making a solo Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. It can't be done.
Okay, yeah, I mean, your most recognizable character that everyone loves, you can't make a movie centered around him. Okay, I guess if that's what you, I mean, maybe this is not the right franchise for you. If that's your feeling.
Yeah. As I said on Twitter, when I saw this news, thinking that an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie cannot be done is showing that you have zero vision or creativity at all. I mean, there are a number of books in the Star Wars, now, you know, Legends universe or whatever, about Obi-Wan Kenobi on Tatooine. There have been rumors, like, an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie has been in production for years. There's, you know, I believe there's rumors that a story has been done. It's just Lucasfilm, with like the fate of Solo, you know, a lot of these movies have been shelved. The actor, Ewan McGregor, has said he would love to come back and play the character. You can make an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie dealing with, you know, all the scum and villainy that you find on Tatooine. The Hutts, I mean, in the original movie, he was referred to as that old wizard. So obviously, some stuff has gone down. He has a reputation on Tatooine. So saying you can't do the same with Optimus Prime is you have no original thought in your head, Mr. Lorenzo Di Bonaventura.
Damn.
It's pissed me off.
Charles, would you like to lay a verbal smackdown as well?
I mean, I don't think I can do anything better than Jeremy here. I mean, I wholeheartedly co-sign and agree with that. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I think it's a worse comparison because like Optimus Prime, like Obi-Wan Kenobi is important to Star Wars, but Optimus mm-hmm. Prime is like the heart of Transformers. That's the right. character. That's the go-to character that they always make a toy first that but all the kids love.
Saying, yeah, it's more saying I can't make a Luke Skywalker movie.
Yeah.
That's where Optimus Prime is in the, you know, Transformers.
So I just don't understand that. I mean,
well, there's still more here, guys. You go ahead. You want to finish your rant? Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, like Bumblebee is fine, but Bumblebee for me is not the main character of Transformers. I don't want everything centered around Bumblebee. Oh, you got me, Jeremy.
So we've got more information regarding the future of the Transformers movie franchise 2019 and beyond. This one is this information was also brought to us by the man behind the curtain, Lorenzo Di Bonaventura. He has stated that one of the latest in the main family series following the events of the Transformers The Last Night and other is a sequel to Bumblebee. Yeah. So, while not much is revealed for the Transformers The Last Night sequel, the Bumblebee one, however, is a buddy movie featuring Optimus Prime and Bumblebee as the main protagonists. Optimus Prime is not a buddy to anyone. He's a commanding
Bumblebee
officer. Bumblebee's the buddy.
In the other article, it said this is kind of like a Lethal Weapon thing with Optimus Prime playing
Danny
Glover, Murtaugh yeah. character, ugh. And Bumblebee is Riggs.
Oh,
it's ridiculous.
I mean, okay, Optimus Prime saying I don't have time for this shit.
Yeah,
I mean that'd fit the Bayverse. But the Optimus Prime we saw in Bumblebee is more of the classic.
He's a commander, you know, yeah.
Yeah, he's not a murderer.
I see this as the Bumblebee movie did well enough to make some money, and Di Bonaventura has the idea now, I can finish my Last Night sequel and get this story told.
No, don't do it. No one liked The Last Night. Don't do a sequel to The Last Night.
I mean, okay, the Optimus Prime Bumblebee movie, we figured Optimus Prime was going to play into the Bumblebee sequel after the ending of that movie. Fine, that, you know, if it had the heart of the Bumblebee movie, totally okay with it. The Last Night thing, no. Or as Mr. LeBouf says.
No. I mean, I just don't understand this because one thing, they already said that the Bumblebee movie is a quote-unquote reboot. So why are you just confusing audiences if you're bringing back a sequel to Last Night? And There is no audience for a Last Night sequel. Did you see the box office returns for The Last Night? No one wants sequel to The Last Night.
D. Bonaventura doesn't know the meaning of the word sequel or reboot.
Quoted somewhere else I read that he has been hearing from the fandom and he wants, they liked Bumblebee and all, but they needed a little bit more Bayhem.
No, where did he hear that?
I say, no, screw you, Mr. Lorenzo Di Bonaventura.
You know who's the fault of this? This is Eric Crownover's fault.
Yeah.
Shut up, Eric. You're killing this for us. I don't know. I think there's going to be some bad decisions made here.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody needs to get Di Bonaventura out of the seat he's in.
We just need Disney to buy Paramount.
Oh, my God.
And then, they can kick him out.
All right. Well, that ends the very, positively spun media news segment this week.
All right. Well, let's finish up the show with some feedback. All right. So we had some Discord feedback from Skirt, one of our Donatrions. And they ask, prediction/bets on where the new IDW Transformers narrative will head after reading issue 1 and having talked to Ruckley, Brian Ruckley, the writer. Or hopes on what direction it might go, given what you know now. So, I think we're going to go towards a civil war. That's probably pretty obvious. I'm curious where, how the Decepticons will rise from the Ascenticons. That's my current, I'm curious what Megatron's grievances are in this new universe, because it doesn't seem like there's really much wrong on Cybertron at this point. I mean, Cybertron doesn't seem like in the old IDW continuity, there was clearly a caste system on Cybertron, mm-hmm. and there was an oppressed minority or oppressed majority, who were, getting really, persecuted and downtrodden by the elite. But here, at least from what we've glimpsed in this first issue, it doesn't seem like that is much of an issue.
We don't really have that information yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what the grievances are that turns Megatron down the path that he will eventually take. But I think the destination is pretty well understood. I mean, we're going towards a civil war, but I am curious. How Orion, what the path of Orion Pax going to becoming Optimus Prime is here. What if the whole Prime idea is still carried forward here? If the Matrix is still an issue here, and what that all entails. I'm also curious what the main cast is going to be. We haven't seen too many bots so far, but at least it looks like Chromia and Prowl are going to be the beat cops investigating the murder. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it, but I don't have any firm predictions. And I just hope it's a good story. I hope it's a compelling story, and the characters get the focus that they deserve. So that's it. Daryl, what are your thoughts?
I think we're going to get a straight up kind of journey to the war. The death is going to ignite a debate on who did it. One side is going to get really, really upset with the accusations, and they're going to snap. I think it's going to be pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
There might be some political influence, I guess. Somebody trying to keep the voices down while they move the dialogue forward, and they don't want to be kept down, so they rebel and the war starts. I've seen it 1,000 times. It happens. Way it happens every single time. Every time, you know, a government pushes back on the downtrodden, civil war. Every time. Without fail.
All right. And Jeremy, do you have any thoughts or predictions?
I'm just waiting for them to get to Earth. You know, the humans are the most important characters. No, I honestly, I'm just expecting a slow build, at least until we get to maybe issue 4. And it helps with the every 2 week thing, assuming Diamond actually does it. I really want to kind of understand the world we're in before action really starts, you know, picking up. But I would say probably issue 4 or 5, I'm expecting, you know, the sparks to be igniting on the, you know, the conflict in, you know, in earnest. I want to see, you know, why is Optimus the only one we've seen with an Autobot logo? And, you know, when do the other people kind of choose their factions? That'll be interesting. The world, they mention, I don't know if it was in the interview or in the book itself, but it mentions that there is an intergalactic community, and Cybertron is a part of it. So it's not like the previous one where they're basically ostracized because they can't stop, you know, blowing things up. And we saw aliens on Cybertron, and there are more aliens. I want to see how that works. And is there kind of an intergalactic, you know, police force type? We saw it with like Ultra Magnus and stuff in the previous, you know. I'm curious as to how all that works. And honestly, I really do like that we're getting all of this stuff. We are still way before anything involving Earth, and I think that's awesome. So yeah, I really dug issue 1. I'm looking forward to just the world building that we're going to get.
All right. That's it for feedback. So I think that brings us to the end of the episode. That's it for Alt Mode this week. So thanks everyone for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Charles, were you playing Switch?
No. I stopped very at the beginning. I put it down. I haven't picked it up again.